This is NASCAR driver Tony Breininger inviting you to make a pit stop at Raising Cane's for my favorite craveable chicken fingers. Turbocharge your order and get it even faster when you order online or with the Raising Cane's app. Raising Cane's chicken fingers, one love. Raising Cane's is not affiliated with NASCAR.
From NPR and WBUR Boston, I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and this is On Point. Hip-hop artist Common is known for his socially conscious songs, his poetic examination of poverty, race, religion, inequality of America. And it was while writing his second memoir that Common kept asking himself, how can I practice love in every situation, every aspect of my life? In his book, Let Love Have the Last Word, Common takes us on a journey into his personal life, to growing up in Chicago, to his relationship with his daughter, to therapy, and a whole lot more. So this hour on Point, Common on his life and love. And you can join us. What do you hear in Common's music? What lessons can he impart to us all? What is your question for this towering talent in hip-hop? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. You can also join us anytime at onpointradio.org or Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Well, joining us now on his way to NPR West in Culver City, California, is Common. Originally from Chicago, he is a songwriter, rapper, actor, and author. He has won an Oscar, Golden Globes, Emmys, and a couple of Grammys. Common, welcome to On Point.
Good morning, Meghna. How are you? And I'm on my way. Good morning. Bless you.
You know what? It's the thrill and joy of live radio that sometimes things don't go exactly as planned. But that's what you talk about in the book, about how to handle those moments when maybe all the pieces haven't yet fallen into place. So we'll keep you on the cell phone here as you're making your way to the studio. But thank you so much for being with us. And
Thank you for having me.
It's so good to have you. So first of all, tell me, look, this book is very personal and richly explored. What was the inspiration for you to write about how this huge thing called love, like the role it plays in your life? Why did you want to write this book?
Well, really, I was looking at the social climate. I was thinking about conversations that I was having with people that felt like fear-based conversations, you know, due to the political climate and the leadership of this country. It felt like a lot of anxiety and divisiveness had been in the air. And I really was trying to dig deep to see what could make us like be better human beings during this time. What has been the antidote or method or ideology that has helped me during difficult times. And even during these times, to keep me like in an optimistic place, and that was actually the practice of love, the thought of love, and it being an action and a purpose in my life. And I really wanted that to apply and others to kind of discover that for themselves. So I say that in the form of like, not love just as a passive thing, not love as something that's just fluffy and just, we're just, you know, talking, but something that you have resources and methods and tools to actually, like, put it in action when you are upset about something, when you are hurt about something, towards the person that doesn't believe what you believe, towards the situation like I talk about with my daughter, who when she is confronting me about not being a good father. How can I, like, and how can we apply love as in our individual lives and in society? That's why I actually wanted to write this book.
So tell me more. I mean, your daughter plays obviously a huge, she's a central part of your life, but also of this book. And you, really near the top of the book, you tell a story about a call that she made while she was still at Howard University, right? She calls you one night, and this is when you have this conversation. So what did she say in that phone call?
Well, in the phone call, it was really late night, and I was, when I saw her calling, I actually was a little alarmed because she doesn't call that late usually. But when I picked up, the conversation just seemed regular initially, and I was just like, oh, she's having fun. And she had been drinking. So I kind of like said, hey, let's talk later, because it was just a regular conversation. It was the middle of the night. But she called me back, and then that's when she really started to pour out her thoughts about me not really being a good father, and that I didn't fight for her when she was young, when her mother and I weren't together. And just different places where she felt hurt and felt that I didn't live up to being a good father. And it alarmed me. It hurt me. I was defensive. It kind of awakened me in a way that, you know, I knew certain things about that I hadn't delivered it in life as a father, but I really thought that I had. And it really just made me look at myself, because after being defensive and those things, I really just decided to listen to her, because for me, that was the only way to truly be loving, and her perspective mattered. Like, to me, that was understanding what love is in that moment.
Well, can I just jump in here for a second, comment, if I may, because I want to use this opportunity to just play one of your tracks from back in 1997. Okay, so we're going to listen to Retrospect for Life here. It's from Common's album, One Day It'll All Make Sense, and it also features the legendary Lauryn Hill.
I'm sorry for taking your first breath, first step, and first cry, but I wasn't prepared mentally nor financially. Having a child shouldn't have to bring out the man in me. Plus, I wanted you to be raised within a family. I don't want to go through the drama of having a baby's mama. Weekend visits and buying J's ain't gonna make me a father. For a while, burying a child is something I never wanted to do. For me to live forever, I can only do that through you. Nerve, I got to talk about those hitting with a gun. Must have really thought I was God to take the life of my son. I could have sacrificed going out. To think my homies who did it, I used to joke about. From now on, I'ma use self-control instead of birth control. Cause $315 ain't worth your soul. $315 ain't worth your soul. $315 ain't worth it.
That's Retrospect for Life from 1997. Common there featuring Lauryn Hill. Common, I mean, this song, so powerful, 22 years later. How much did becoming a father change your life? Still with us, Common? Okay, we're going to try and get him back on the line. He's probably somewhere in a car on his way to the studio. While we wait for to get Common back on the line, actually, let's hear from some of his fans. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK, and we are talking this hour. We'll continue to, I promise, to Common, a multi-award-winning rapper, hip-hop artist, actor, and songwriter. So let's go to Todd, who's calling from Cleveland, Ohio. Todd, you're on the air.
Okay, my question is really directly to Common.
We'll get him back, I promise. We'll get him back. But go ahead and give me your question.
Well, if I pose it to you, I can't guarantee that he's going to hear it and be able to absorb it correctly. So I would really like to pose my question directly to Common about something that he talked about.
All right, so I'll give you a chance to pose your question to him in a second here. But as soon as – actually, we might just have him. Common, are you there?
I'm here. I was walking in the building as you were asking.
Great. That sounds live, so much better.
this is live radio. I really appreciate you all's patience.
Oh, my goodness.
But
it's no problem.
But I do want to answer your question, because you said, how has being a father changed me?
Yeah. Hang on. We just want to tell Todd, our caller. Todd, don't hang up. I'm going to give you a chance to ask Common your question, but let's hear from him first. Go ahead. Tell us, how did it change your life to become a father?
Well, I mean, initially it was like a lot of fear about like the responsibility of what it is to be a father. Like when I was writing the song Retrospect for Life, it was like, wow, my whole life is going to change. And it did, but it didn't all change for like, just everything didn't just have to be serious. It was just my perspective of what I thought fatherhood was. But what I've learned about fatherhood now is that it is a journey, and it's like you learn from your child or your children, if you have children. And it's a process of, when I'm talking about like practicing love, it's a practice of learning, you know, what fatherhood is. You won't know everything at first, but you will And you won't know everything at last either, but you'll, you know, initially have instincts of just honestly just being a loving father mm-hmm. and a guide has been the foundation. And some mistakes will be made and some, you know, lessons will have to be learned in the hard way. But what I've learned most is to listen now that I will learn from Amoye. She has been a teacher for me, not just now and with that conversation, but since she was young, I learned a lot from her. And to also enjoy fatherhood has been something that I've learned. So
yeah. Well, later in the book, you talk about how when your daughter told you that she had, or you know, clearly told you that she felt that you hadn't really been there for her as much as you could have been when she was young, because I mean you were being Common and creating this great career, that you were also actually recording an album at near the same time, and there was a particular track, Swish a Sweet, that that your daughter said, hey, because you talk about fatherhood in that track too, is that right?
Yeah, yes. You know, yeah, Swish a Sweet is a song that actually has come from a project I did with August Green. August Green is a group that Robert Glasper and myself and Kareem Riggins formed. So after our conversation, you know, and her telling me that she really, you know, didn't think I was a good father, she heard the song Swish a Sweet, and I wrote about it. I wrote about, you know, saying that sometimes, you know, as being a father, I did my best, and, it, you know, some of the good things come along with the bad, meaning I'm not perfect.
Well, we're going to actually listen. We got to take a quick break here, Common. We're going to listen to go into the break. We're hearing a little bit of Swish a Sweet, and we'll pick up this conversation when we come back in about 60 seconds. So we are talking this hour with Common. We'll be back. This is On Point. These are alkaline rhymes with no acid. If I'ma do some fish, I'ma be cold at it. Lying to a chick, man, that's my old habits. Daughter talks, divine order caught me by the collar, what it is to be a father. Made some mistakes, some things I was good at. You take away the bad, then you gotta take the good back. It's all a journey, she came through us for us to teach us and me to learn me till the judge adjourn me. I'm the attorney of a universal law. Fill out an application and I gotta circle raw. Oh, I'm feeling it, willing it to existence. Living in temptation, living in resistance. Got to know persistence, it helped me travel the distance. Now in the battle I find with blisses. Got a wish list for my people, let the crib to get it right. Got a wish list for my people, let the crib that we can get it right.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/on point. That's Indeed.com/on point. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
When it go down, we woman and man up. They say stay down, and we stand up. Shots, we on the ground. The camera panned up. King pointed to the mountaintop, and we ran up.
One day, when the glory comes, it will be ours, it will be ours.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and that is Common and John Legend in their Academy Award-winning and Golden Globe-winning award-winning song, Glory, from the movie Selma. Wow. Common joins us this hour. He has made it to the studio. He's the author of a new memoir, Let Love Have the Last Word. He is a multi-award-winning hip-hop artist, actor, and songwriter. And Common, you know what? I'm going to talk to you about this song, about Glory, here for just a second. But Todd, our caller, he has been waiting so patiently. He wanted to ask you that question before the break, and I want to give him a chance to do that. So, Todd, are you still with us?
I am still with you.
All right, now talk to Common. He's all yours.
Common, you hear me all right, man?
Peace. Yes, sir. How you doing, Todd? Thank you for your patience, man.
It's cool, man. Okay, so check this out, man. I have a clear definition for love: the selfless devotion to the healthy nurturing of someone or something. It alleviates unnecessary discrepancy in conversations with people most of the time, okay? Now, I'm telling you that so you know where I'm coming from, all right?
Mm-hmm.
I heard
yes,
you say that you went in therapy because you were in love with being in love. I had never heard a dude in our age bracket say something like that. So I would like you to do this. separate from using the word love, could you better describe what it is that you were talking about when you were in therapy for being in love, with being in love, without using the word love, so it would alleviate any discrepancy as to how you ended up there?
Yeah, well, I mean, actually, Todd, the reason I was in therapy wasn't because I was in love with being in love. I was in therapy because I was repeating the cycles of in relationships, and I was in a breakup that was really causing me to have to like see why I kept finding myself in this cycle in a relationship doing the same things, and I really needed to dig deep in within myself and have a non-biased person who's a professional who could help me to understand, you know, some of my behavior and some of my fears. So it wasn't in love with being in love. It was in fear and wounds, really, and in places of trepidation and cycles, repetition. So maybe I said that statement just in the context of, you know, what I found out after I was talking with my therapist was the fact that something called love addiction is what I was falling into a cycle with also. And that was the feeling of just wanting to have that, like that honeymoon stage, that honeymoon phase. And when that phase goes away in a relationship, not being willing to work and do the work that it takes to sustain and grow a relationship. So that's what happened, Todd. I hope I, you know, gave it to you and the people in a way that you know, fits in the definition of what love is, because I really love your definition of.
Hey, Todd, can I ask you a question? Was it important for you or to you that someone like Common, with such a huge global platform, as a hip-hop artist and a black man, could talk so openly and freely about the process that he went through in going to therapy?
Was it important to me? No. But I have a reasonably healthy appreciation for a guy that can stand up and say, I made some errors, this is what I did to correct the errors, and these are the errors that aren't quite corrected, but I'm trying to still work on them. So I'm cool with that. Do your thing, Black. You all right with me, Common?
All right. Thanks, brother. I appreciate you, man.
Todd, thank you so much for your call. Well, let's take another call here. Robin is calling from Boston, Massachusetts. Robin, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you so much for taking my call. Hi, Carmen.
How you doing, Robin?
I'm doing very well. It's such a joy and pleasure to talk to you. I just wanted to share a quick story. I met you, I was with my family, and we were so fortunate to meet you the day after you won your Academy Award for Selma in 2015. And you were so gracious, so generous. You took pictures with us. You let us hold your Oscar.
Wow.
We would have done that other than you. And just, we love that time. And we rode extra floors to go up to another floor in the elevator so we could continue the conversation. And I think the reason that you are so loved by all of us, your fans, and your career has flourished and lasted is because you are so relatable, so real of the people. And just I am not from the United States, but I happen to teach African American history, and we had a very spontaneous conversation about what all oppressed people and cultures have in common. And I just thought that was beyond what a celebrity and an artist should and would do. And I'm just so grateful for your presence in the art world, and I so appreciate you.
Robin,
well, thank you.
Yeah. Oh, sorry, Carmen. Go ahead.
Robin. I was just going to say thank you, Robin, and I'm glad we got to share that moment. That obviously was a really special time in my life to be able to win an Academy Award, but I do believe in you know, with the Academy Award, or, you know, not when I believe in treating human beings like with love, with respect, and I just appreciate humanity, and that humanity is a true reflection of God. So I just do my best to treat everybody with love. You know, even I'm not always perfect with that, but even at times when I'm not in the best of moods, I still feel like, man, if an individual is coming up to give me, greet me, or even if they're not, I try to speak to them. You know, it's beyond anything that has to do with celebrity, we're just human beings, you know.
Well, Robin, thank you so much for your call. And Common, I mean, since Robin mentioned Selma, the movie, and we opened this segment with Glory, which, by the way, hearing you and John Legend together,
yeah,
it's just so fantastic. But the title of your book, Let Love Have the Last Word, right there at the top, you open with the quotation where that title comes from, right? It's from Dr. King. Do you mind if I read that? Read the quotation?
Yes, please read it.
Yeah, so this is from Dr. King. He says, "We can no longer afford to worship the god of hate or bow before the altar of retaliation. As Arnold Toynbee says, love is the ultimate force that makes for the saving choice of life and good against the damning choice of death and evil. Therefore, the first hope in our inventory must be the hope that love is going to have the last word." So what does that quotation from Dr. King mean to you?
I mean, I really felt that it means that we have to focus on our loving selves and loving side and the things that bring out the love in us and in others, and not allow like hatred, not allow jealousy, not allow envy or even ignorance in the fact that you may not know about another individual or people or culture or race, not allow that ignorance to prevail over the fact that we as human beings have a capacity to love in the warmest way, in the best way, in the most compassionate way.
Mm-hmm.
So I actually, you know, when I came across that quote, I was like, this is what this book I wanted to be about, is how do we apply this ideology in every aspect of our lives. And that's why I said, let love have the last word. Like, we're going to allow love to be the forefront, the middle, and the end of everything we do.
But it's got to, I mean, you're as human as the rest of us, perhaps slightly a little more superhuman, but you're as human as the rest of us.
It's got to
be it's got to be hard sometimes. It's got to be hard sometimes. I mean, I'm seeing here, if I can find the page, I've dog-eared so many pages here in your book.
I'm so glad.
I admit doubt in my heart sometimes about love's effectiveness amongst so much horror and so much suffering. So it's got to be hard sometimes for you to, like, constantly just try to lead with this notion that love is going to inform every action every day.
Well, that's honestly, yes. It's the truth is moments where, like, shoot, on my way here, I was like, I need to be in the studio. I'm like, I was mad at myself and other people. But, you know, I had to overcome that emotion with something that centers me and lets me know that everything is going to be okay. Now, that's a situation I'm describing just right now, but it's situations that become even more heavy, like when you find out, you know, like someone has betrayed you, or even if you find out something that may deal with your health issues, how do you apply, like, I'm not asking of anybody, not myself or anybody, to not feel the emotion of pain or the emotion or the feeling of hurt, the feeling of anger. But how do you usurp that feeling? How do you overcome that feeling and defeat or not even defeat the feeling, but work through it and let your results be something that is adding to your life instead of continuing to like, okay, if I figure I have a wound and I keep like dwelling on that wound and don't think about healing that wound, all I'm saying is like, hey, acknowledge the wound. You can even say ouch, but you don't have to stay in that wound forever. We can move past it with these tools, with love, but love is a tool. Like, love is like, it's not only just a feeling, it's not only just an expression, it's a tool, it's a resource.
Yeah.
And I'm just saying, like, use it as a resource.
Well, I'm going to talk for a moment about how this drive to put love at the center of everything plays itself out in your music. But in order to do that, let's listen to something a little bit different. And here it is. Here's this piece of music. Of course, A Love Supreme, right? From John Coltrane, 1965. I shouldn't have talked then, because there he is.
Yeah. Ah, man, that's, you understand, that is like, I could put on Love Supreme at any moment, and it just centers me, it just gives me a peace. When I sometimes ride up the Pacific Coast Highway, just listening to A Love Supreme, looking at the ocean, and it just, man, it just makes me appreciate God and all the creations and music and life, and I can just let my mind float. So, but that's when I'm talking about love, Magna, it's like the love that he put in his music, the spirituality that he put in his music is something that can really actually bring people together, can actually like inspire people and motivate people and heal people. It has been that. And when I'm saying let's apply that, I'm saying, man, I get mad at the airport at certain people, you know, that certain things happen, and the flight attendant could be talking to me disrespectfully. I'm going to feel that I'm going to feel pissed, but I have the right and the duty and the ability to rise above that and function on a higher vibration and not like let that pull me to a level where I'm starting to operate in negative energy and kind of perpetuating the cycle. It's the mantra that Michelle Obama spoke of when she said, when they go low, we go high.
Right.
Those are powerful words, simple, but powerful. And to me, that's the exact belief that I have when I'm talking about letting love have the last word.
So since you mentioned the former first lady, I got to ask you, in the book you talk about how she's given you relationship advice?
Yeah, well, yeah. I had the gift and pleasure to visit the White House while President Obama and First Lady Michelle Obama were in office. And we had dinner at one point, and she was asking me about where I was in relationships. And I told her I was single, and she was like, "What? What's going on?" And like, I told her where I was with relationships as far as, like, I haven't found the person that has these things and those things. And she just broke it down to me in a real simple way. Like, look, the things that are important to you, you should look for. But no person is going to have everything because none of us are perfect. You know, that's essentially what she said. And it kind of really was helpful to me because in my life, I'm always seeking, you know, just, like in music, I'm always doing it to the highest level that I can. Like, I'm gonna tweak it till I get it to the best, you know, till I think it's what it should be. But I have to understand, in relationships, I'm not perfect, so how can I expect another individual to be perfect? And that's what, you know, a relationship, from even from Michelle Obama, First Lady Michelle Obama's advice, it was reinforcement that you grow with someone. Like, a relationship should help you to grow. And that's in every relationship, whether it's mother, son, father, daughter, cousin, friend to friend, spouse, lovers. We should be helping each other to grow.
Yeah, absolutely. So we've just got about 30 seconds before we got to take our next break here. But I want to hear from you a little bit about who were your biggest examples of living this way when you were growing up.
My mother, for sure. As a teacher, she went beyond just teaching in a classroom, bringing people home bringing like students home just to help them. My godmother was really like that also, just loving and giving. My uncle, he would go beyond, because my father wasn't living with my father, and I didn't have the closest relationship growing up. My uncle would show and take us to events, and you know, also I think, you know, I had examples that were distant from me, but I really looked at them as my heroes. Muhammad Ali, Dr. Maya Angelou, Dr. King, and my pastor, Reverend Jeremiah Wright, from the church that I went to. I felt love from those individuals, and I saw them expressing that love, you know, in their lives. So.
Well, come and hang on here for a second, because we do have to take a quick break. We're going to go into the break listening to The Corner from the 2005 album B. This is On Point. We'll be right back. They bags is herbalist, the dirt isn't just fertile. It's people working and earning. It's the curve getter. Show where the cash flow and the current is. It's so hot that burner live. The furnace is where the money move and the determined live. We talk, play lotto and buy German beers. It's so black, packed with action that's affirmative. The corner. I wish I could keep this feeling. I wish I could keep this feeling. On the corner, private killing. Gibraltar, I Stonehenge, I Taj Mahal, I monument, I testimonial to freedom, to peace, and to love. Down on the corner.
A gruesome scandal at the nation's most prestigious university shines a light on a macabre and lucrative world of buying and selling human remains.
Human body parts taken by a manager at the Harvard Medical School morgue and then sold to customers online.
So my first skull is right there on the top shelf. That's my first and my favorite.
I'm reporter Allie Jarmani, and this story raises some tough questions. How should we treat the dead? And who gets to decide?
There should be some middle ground where we treat deceased tissues differently than we treat old refrigerators.
This is Postmortem, The Stolen Bodies of Harvard, a new season of WBUR's Last Scene. Listen and follow Last Scene wherever you get your podcasts.
King, Luther with dreams, the young Denzel, the way I move through scenes. I'm like a preacher that once was a fiend, a story of change that came with wings.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and that is Blue Sky from the 2011 album The Dreamer, The Believer from Common. Common joins us today. He's at the studios of NPR West in Culver City, California. He's out with a new memoir called Let Love Have the Last Word. And we're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. And Common, you know, I had a bunch of questions for you, but we have so many good people on the line who want to talk to you that I'm just going to let them in, okay? So we'll spend the rest of the time getting callers to hear what they have to say. So let's start with Roosevelt, who's calling from Detroit, Michigan. Roosevelt, you're on the air with Common.
Thank you. Thank you very much for taking my call. Good afternoon to you, and good afternoon, Common.
Peace. Good morning,
yes,
brother.
Yes, sir. So
doing?
I'm doing good. Listen, just right to the point, man. You came and you fellowship with us at the Detroit Jazz Festival, I'm going to say 2 years ago, and I have a biological brother who for 30 years worked in business, and then he got diagnosed with pancreatic cancer, pretty bad, but he continued to volunteer at the Jazz Festival. Hey, man, he worked on a stage that brought you to the stage, but before you came on stage, he gathered a few people to meet you. Mr. Common, man, you were so kind to my brother. Man, my brother looks like he's ill, because he is, but he's fighting. And
yes.
I just publicly needed to say that to you in some form. And God directed me to this station. This is my radio station.
Yes.
And here you are. And they've allowed me this opportunity to say thank you from me and my family. You were kind to my brother. His name is Jerry Lawrence in Detroit. And so from those of us in Detroit, our signature is what up, though? And
yes.
Anytime you come back to this part of America, please drop in and check us out in Detroit.
Yeah.
Bless You Man, your book. I'm on it, and I'm going to get one for him as well, so we can both read it and then kick it.
Well, I just want to say, Roosevelt, thank you for that, and man, I'm sending love and blessings to your brother Jerry. Man, may you know, wellness be in his body and his spirit, and y'all just keep sending great positive energy towards him, and thank you for that, man. And also, I want to tell you, along with the book, Let Love Have the Last Word, I have an album and music coming out called, the new single is coming out actually tomorrow, produced by J Dilla, one of Detroit's greatest ever. The first single is Her Love, and it's featuring Daniel Caesar with special guest Dwelle, who's also from Detroit. And I just want to say I loved performing in Detroit at the Jazz Festival with Kareem Riggins and Robert Glasper. But I love Detroit. I'm from Chicago, and Detroit is like, you know, it's one of those cities that I feel an affinity to because of all the people.
Well, Detroit today is loving you back, Carmen, because we've got another caller from the Motor City. Let's go to John. John, you're on the air with Carmen.
Hello, how you doing, Carmen?
Peace. What's going on, John?
Man, I just got to tell you, so much love. You don't really get chances to express appreciation to artists like this, but one of my favorite songs from you and period is Retrospect for Life. And I have to say that because growing up without a father in my life, that song gives a real honest view of the beginnings of fatherhood, the convictions to do it well. I appreciate it, man. I appreciate it. And can I give you my top four comedy songs?
Yes, please do. Thanks, John. First, thank you for those.
Oh, yeah, my absolute favorite comedy songs. Again, Retrospect for Life, the intro to Be, Forever Begins on Finding Forever, and the fourth one is not really technically a common song, but it's Respiration. So, Common, thank you for the contributions to art, and it's a big part of music. Is a big part of my life, and your music is a big part of that. So, thanks, man. Much love from Detroit.
Thanks, brother. I'm honored, man. I appreciate it. You got a great variety of Common songs, so I appreciate that, brother.
Hey, Common, so since John talked about that he grew up without a father, your father moved to a different state when you were, like, what, one?
He actually probably moved when I was six, but my mother and father weren't together by the time I was one. And ironically enough, you know, My daughter's mom and I split up when she was one. And that's, you know, something that John just brought up is like fatherhood is, when you don't have a father in the home, you got to learn you have to learn on your own about what it is to be a man and figure these things out. And you try to pick pieces from each man that you see in your life that possesses those qualities you like, but it is a journey within that. And I bring it up because I feel like at some point, what the healing that I'm talking about doing, like when it comes to therapy and mindfulness and just spirituality, I got to mention, you know, when I talk about therapy, I look at that as a form of just working on self. And I feel like God works in different ways for us to be better, and we can, you know, we have to do the work, but the path is there for us, and therapy has been that path for me to stop the cycle of what, you know, like the things that I've repeated that maybe my father's repeated or maybe his father's repeated or even some of the things that my mom has repeated. So I just bring that up to say, fatherhood is an important thing to me, and I enjoy it, and I want to, you know, work to be the best that I can be.
Well, I want to hear some more music because when John listed all his favorite Common tracks, and we've got more here with us. So let's listen to Letter to the Free. This is from the 2016 album Black America Again.
The caged bird sings for freedom to ring. Black bodies being lost in the American dream. Blood a black bean, a pastoral scene. Slavery still alive, check Amendment 13. Not whips and chains, are subliminal. Instead of, they use the word criminal. Sweet land of liberty, incarcerated country. Shot me with your ray gun and now you wanna trump me. Prison is a business, America's the company. Investing in the justice, fear and long suffering. We staring in the face of hate again. The same hate they say will make America great again. No consolation prize for the dehumanized. For America to rise is a matter of black lives. And we gon' free them so we can free us. America's moment to come to Jesus.
That's Common's Letter to the Free from 2016. Let's go to Ruth, who's calling from Lincoln, Nebraska. Ruth, my producers tell me you like this song.
I love this song. How are you both today?
Hey, Ruth, how you doing?
I'm doing well, thank
you. Still with us, Ruth?
Women, we are, yes?
Yeah, go ahead, go ahead. Your line just dropped there for a second, but go ahead.
Oh, I honor the shout out to the women and men who are incarcerated in our nation. That is the people that I am privileged to work with every single day. And we need to do better in our nation, serving our women and men who are coming out of incarceration to extend love and mercy and grace to them. And we help to teach them to honor their own humanity. And we help our folks in Nebraska honor the humanity of our incarcerated sisters and brothers. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Ruth. And I must say I've been, you know, with the organization I'm a part of, Imagine Justice, and also ARC, A-R-C, Anti-Recidivism Coalition, have been visiting men and women who are incarcerated. And I have to agree with you. I've met some of the most humane and enlightened people that are incarcerated, people who've committed violent crimes and nonviolent crimes that have been able to trace a lot of the violence and their act and the things that they've done to like the wounds of sexual abuse, child abuse, the violence that they've experienced as children, and that it translated to them also becoming violent in certain ways. And I just have to say that insight has helped me to understand that I have to reach for these individuals even more. And because that's how we stop the cycle. And as you said, when people are coming back into society, if we treat them as human beings because they are human beings, then we're better in our society. And a society is always also measured by how you treat those that are oppressed, those that are looked down upon, those who have been deemed as, you know, criminals. A society should be measured by how we treat each and every individual in life. Mm. And I think, you know, our criminal justice system needs a reshaping where to the point where it can really actually improve people's lives and really like stop it would stop the violence if the criminal justice system was dedicated to bettering individuals that do come in with these unhealthy acts and these acts of violence. Yeah, so I'm all for you, Ruth, on what you're doing, and thank you for your work. And we're continuing to do more work with Imagine Justice and ARC.
Well, Ruth, thank you so much for your call. I want to see if I can get one more in here. Douglas is calling from Harrisonburg, Virginia. Douglas, you're on the air with Common.
Hey, Common, how's it going, man?
Peace. What's going on, Douglas?
Dude, I want to say thank you, man. It is so rare to find a male celebrity that's the genuine article. Someone I can point to, like with my kids, and be like, that's a real man right there. And I just wanted you to know, like, I found you in 2007 with Finding Forever. And I mean, still to this day, Start the Show and About the People are like my favorite hip hop songs always. Wow. But the question I have for you was, I try to live through love the way you're advocating. But for me, I have a bit of a temper issue. Like, how do you, when you're being disrespected by, you know, the flight attendant or whatever, like how do you keep in perspective and not like, all right, I need to let this person know that they're doing something wrong? Like, how do you stipend that, my man?
Man, that's a great question, Doug. And I think that you do let the person know that if they're doing something wrong. You do set a boundary, but you do it with respect. And I, you know, some of the tools that I've used is like, I've worked on mindfulness. Like mindfulness is like a practice of really being aware and being present. And also almost like you're almost taking a step outside of yourself and looking at how you are acting at the moment, in mindfulness. And also actually being aware of the people that you're interacting with and just taking that breath and that stop and seconds for a second centering yourself will allow you. It's no matter what, if you take a deep breath in and out, it automatically centers you for a mm-hmm. second, you know. And, you know, it's other tools that may help you, but because, and I'm not a official like psychiatrist or person, but I'm just telling you things that has helped me, a therapist. I'm not that, but these breathing techniques of mindfulness, sometimes, like I said, just stepping back and just taking a second, because I'm not in love. I'm not talking about not speaking up for yourself. Like I love is activism too. Like Angela Davis was the work she was doing is full of love. The work that the Black Panthers was doing and Dolores Huerta and Harry Belafonte, these are acts of love. So it's not like I'm saying like just sit down and just let somebody just disrespect you and you'd be like, oh, I'm just gonna react in love and just not do yeah. anything. But it's like acting on a higher vibration and actually within you, your response, you actually may be lifting them up because you not responding in on the same level that they coming at you on. So I know it's actually, you know, I know how tough it is, Doug, because I go through it almost every day, man. At some point, I feel that urge to just go off, you know. But it's like these tools and these resources are helping me to be a better person. And the more I practice it, the more natural it becomes for me. So I think, Doug, you just got to find those things that center you and get you to a point where you react, where you are acting off your God self, your higher self.
Yeah. It feels like sometimes it feels like it's harder than ever to do that, though, right? Because, like, I don't know, it just, this nation feels like we're in a moment of where retribution and lashing out and just immediately sort of tripping over our worst selves is what happens.
Yeah, but I mean, that's exactly why I actually wrote this book and talked about Let Love Have the Last Word, is because if we just feed into that, then we'll be talking about the same thing 10 years from now. Mm-hmm. Like we'll be talking about this 2 years from now. Like, but if we, like my way of fighting what is going on with the president, with the government, with the divisiveness, is to go out and do acts of love, to go out, do things that are building the community, to go out, do things that are bettering myself, to go out and be strong towards for my family and go out and lift people up. That's how we combat all this craziness. It's not to feeding into it, is only just helping to destroy ourselves and the people yeah. and other people.
Well, the new memoir is Let Love Have the Last Word. Common, it has been so great to talk with you. Our phone lines are just like hop in this hour, and people loved hearing from you. So thank you so much with rolling with us, getting yourself to the studio, and it's been great to have you. Thank you so much, Common.
I want to say it's been an honor to be here, and because I, you know, came in later, I'm asking that I do a part two, that we do a part
yeah.
two at some point, especially because I have the album coming out this summer, Let Love, so we can talk even more about, you know, I talk about different things
right.
on the album, from molestation, you know, to being to some of the
right.
subject matters in the book. So.
Well, you know what? We've got to wrap up now because the clock is going to stop us. But you consider yourself booked for this summer. We're going to make that happen. So
okay,
we're going to.
I appreciate it.
We're going to go out with The Light from its 2000 album, Like Water for Chocolate. Common is going to come back with us in a future date. But that's it for today. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.